It's Tuesday, January 19th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today from Stock Advisor Canada, Taylor Muckerman, and from Million Dollar Portfolio, Jason Moser. Happy Tuesday, gents.
You too.
Tuesday.
Nice long weekend.
Fresh off a three-day.
Three-day weekend here in the U.S. For our international listeners. Sorry you didn't get Monday off, but we're back.
Are your kids off school today?
Yes.
Yes, mine are too.
Yep.
They are in.
One of mine is.
They're at school doing the after-school program they have there normally. Yeah, it's just you have those extra days off, and it's like you juggling all these different balls.
Yeah.
What's the excuse?
Teacher work day.
MLK day, and then they sort of parlay their, you know, success there in the one day off and make it two and just,
why not?
You know, get to work. And
there you go.
Maybe they get Friday off, too.
Sure. Hey, well, they should.
Snow coming. Should.
We're going to dip into the full mailbag. We're going to start with some earnings, though. United Health, fourth quarter revenue, $46.5 billion. Profits came in at just north of $1.2 billion, which is higher than expected, although lower than a year ago. But, you know, they beat expectations. It's all about expectations, and stock getting a little bump up today.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, a good point that you mentioned there. And, I mean, this is often, at least in the short run, it's an expectations game. And I think investors came into this quarter with probably some muted expectations, given the headlines we've seen recently about United Health, you know, talking about closing down some of their programs because of the Affordable Health Care Act, because they weren't able to manage the costs on that side of things. I think, you know, you saw certainly that politically speaking, I mean, that was, I think, something that politicians had a lot of fun using. But the results speak for themselves. And I think when you're looking at the healthcare sector, I mean, it's a sector where you've got a lot of people, you know, trying to get their little share because there's so much money involved. I mean, it's 18 to 20% of our national GDP, which is obviously very significant. But United Healthcare is one of the biggest operators out there, and they saw strong growth in the health services side of the business, the part of the business that's called Optum, which focuses more on services, less on the insurance side like United Healthcare does. And that's interesting to note because Optum is the side that's really growing more quickly than the insurance side. And operating profit-wise, it's more significant, or it's growing to be a more significant part of the business. So I think that's why investors are at least optimistic as far as these results go. They're now serving 129 million people versus 88.5 million people a year ago. And the key to the Optum side of this business is it gives them a chance to control the costs better versus the insurance side, where they have a little bit less say in that negotiation, so to speak. Certainly shareholders have won holding on to these shares the last 5 years. Shares have outperformed the market handily. And I think that typically when you're looking at this space, we want to focus on the big dogs first, and this really is the big dog.
Yeah, we were talking, Taylor, right before we started taping here about how certainly it almost doesn't matter which industry you're looking at. If you're just looking at sentiment and expectations heading into this earnings season, to borrow Jason's word, they're muted. Mm-hmm. There are muted expectations, and as you made the comment, we could be seeing a lot of red. So against a backdrop of those types of expectations, United Health putting up some pretty good numbers.
Yeah, the market's certainly looking for reasons to sell these days and didn't give them any, even though there were some losses attributed to the Affordable Care Act, and they say that that could double in 2016. 40, I guess, that Optum is almost 50% of their business and growing like it was able to right the ship and then some.
Holiday retail numbers are starting to come in. And in the case of Tiffany, they're not looking good. Same-store sales for the holiday season down 5%. This stock, this used to be as steady a performer in its space as any out there. And today, shares of Tiffany hitting a three-year low.
Yeah, I think this is another example in support of the argument that when it comes to retail in general as an investment, I would never look at any real retail with the exception of perhaps Amazon, but that's more than just retail, I'd say, is I would never look at retail as just a straight-up buy and just hold it and just let it go investment. Because, I mean, these things kind of go in cycles, and there are certainly retailers that are more open to things like currency effects or economic conditions, perhaps. And so with Tiffany, I mean, this is not affordable luxury. This is straight-up luxury. And even more so, it's got, you know, 50% plus of their money is made from overseas. And so they witness, some serious headwinds here in the form of a stronger dollar, not to mention a crimped consumer, globally speaking. And so that's sort of where this is falling down for Tiffany right now. I mean, you're not going to see Tiffany resort to Black Friday sales, to holiday liquidation sales. They're going to kind of take their lumps as they come. And so this has been a pretty difficult holiday season for a lot of retailers, certainly for luxury retailers. And so we're seeing that play out today. Now, and I think for investors, the thing to focus on with Tiffany really is one of its strengths is a management team that's smart enough to go ahead and take their lumps and say, okay, listen, this is just going to be a tough period of time. We got to batten down the hatches. We're going to cut back on our workforce a little bit, control costs a little bit. But they're not going to resort to trying to liquidate their merchandise, because then that sort of ruins that luxury sort of halo that they've been able to enjoy for so long.
I was going to say that
Joseph A. Bank sales coming.
No holiday weekend sales.
Well, I think that for investors, though, you look at that, and so I mean, it's obviously very very pessimistic today. I mean, shares are trading around 17 times full year estimates with the revised guidance that came out today. Now, this is a stock that in better times when things are a bit more optimistic, that's a multiple that's more towards like 20, 21, 22, 23. And so as bad as things sound today, I mean, these are the times when actually investors want to start looking at a business like Tiffany, because this is, again, a very high quality business. It's been managed very wisely. And management, I think, knows that one of their biggest advantages is the luxury halo that they've been able to maintain with that brand. And it sounds like they continue to do that, just kind of taking their lumps in difficult times.
The little blue box helps.
And that's just it. I mean, that's precisely
all
my point.
All kidding aside,
right there.
This still remains a very strong brand.
It carries a lot of sway. And I mean, as an investor, I don't own shares, but if I ever saw this business resorting to fire sales, liquidation sales, things like that, that would be my first big red flag, and I'd be out of this thing, as fast as possible, because that is, to my mind, really probably their greatest advantage.
I was actually surprised to see that 25% of their U.S. sales are attributed to tourists.
Yeah.
That caught me off guard. So that's not helping things either.
No.
MarketFoolery@fool.com is our email address from Chris Niehart or Niehart. Sorry, Chris. He writes, wondering if you could please shed some light on the precious metals industry. I currently and continue to invest in the following stocks: Silver Wheaton, Newmont Mining, Franco-Nevada, and First Majestic. All of these companies have had to adjust their operations in order to remain competitive with the current precious metals prices. I believe silver and gold prices have bottomed, and these companies are positioned to excel with the increase in future metal prices. What are your thoughts with the industry and these companies? Precious metals, not something we spend a lot of time looking at, Taylor, but you've looked at this a little bit.
Silver Wheaton is a company that we recommend in Stock Advisor Canada. It's a company I like. I've spoken with Randy Smallwood, their CEO, a couple of times, and streaming models, so they're not actually doing the mining, and I think that might be the best way to gain exposure. So you're not getting that direct exposure to the cost side of the business. You're not getting that direct side to prices, or Silver Wheaton has an all-in total cash cost of just over $4 per silver ounce and $386 per ounce of gold. So some significant margins there, and they can forecast that out with pretty good accuracy 5 to 10 years based on the contracts that they've got laid out. So you've got great visibility into the cost structure of the company, and in times like this, they're not necessarily having to go off and lay off a bunch of employees, because they only have a few hundred compared to thousands, tens of thousands that some of these miners have. So I like the fact that he's concentrated on those streamers in terms of metal exposure. Personally, that's as far as I would go. I wouldn't go out there and invest in a miner. Or same thing, as I look at oil and gas producers. I look at precious metal producers the same way. Just too much direct exposure to a cyclical business. But I think Silver Wheaton, he's on to something there. And Franco-Nevada is another streamer, not necessarily as big, but still entertains silver and gold. And I think they also have some oil streaming as well. So a little bit more diversification there. You look at some gold miners out there saying that production is at its peak right now, based on companies pulling back on CapEx due to a low price market over the last few years. And then just quality of gold that people are finding isn't worth mining for right now. So you could be seeing a supply peak for at least the next few years. So some people are looking at that as a long-term positive for gold prices.
Question from Eric Small, who writes, I'm wanting to dip my toe in the waters of investing. I live in Pittsburgh, home of many publicly traded companies, and I want to feature these local companies in my portfolio. Is there an inherent risk of not diversifying my holdings by geography as well as business types? Interesting question. I never really thought about, I mean, we've talked about diversification a bunch of times.
Sure.
And as we've said before, diversification comes in many forms. I hadn't really thought about it in terms of city-based geography. I'd certainly thought about it in terms of country-based geography. But, I mean, let me just tick off a few of the names of publicly traded companies, because from an industry standpoint, yes, these are all Pittsburgh-based companies, but Alcoa, Dick's Sporting Goods, GlaxoSmithKline, PNC Financial, U.S. Steel, Westinghouse Electric. That's a pretty broad range of industries. But what are your thoughts to his question about Pittsburgh-centric companies?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a good question just in the sort of the bigger context of just diversity in general. And I think, you know, one of the things we enjoy here in the United States is a fairly – it's country where we're free to kind of go wherever we want to go. And so I wouldn't sweat that, you know, type of diversity as much, sort of the geographical nature.
I mean, I could go with it.
I don't think I would. I mean, I'd look at something. I mean, I could go, you know, go to Atlanta, for example, and I could have a portfolio with Home Depot, UPS, Carter's, and Coca-Cola, all based out of Atlanta, and that would be a very diversified portfolio when you consider how these companies make their money. I mean, those are very well-diversified companies that make their money far beyond just Atlanta, just Georgia, and even just the United States in some cases. And so I think that's where my first sort of priority would come into play. Now, I mean, anything can happen, right? I mean, that just who knows? And there could be a situation where you might not want to have all of your eggs in one basket, even when it comes to sort of geography or a city in the United States. And so, yeah, I mean, it's worth knowing where your businesses are located. But I mean, I also think it's really I think it's a neat idea to want to try to get as many of the local businesses in your portfolio as you can, because I mean, you are going to have sort of that boots on the ground sort of instant feedback, just kind of seeing what's going on. Typically speaking, I mean, recession in the United States is recession in the United States. I don't think you're going to see recession as much in one city versus another, you know, unless that city is particularly exposed to one industry that's really under fire. But a good question, and certainly one where, diversity is key in all of its forms. And I would even at some point, even if my portfolio was all centralized in Atlanta or Pittsburgh, sure, I'd try to give the rest of the cities in the country some love. Why not?
Well, it's a great point, because we talk all the time about you're going to sleep better at night, you're going to generally do better with your investments the better you know the businesses. And I think in Eric's case, part of that may just be, hey, look, when there is news affecting these companies, it's going to hit Pittsburgh first. We're going to hear about it first, and depending on how big your circle of friends and family is, you may know people working at these companies as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, it's also worth noting that even with businesses being based in one particular city, when you consider how large many of those businesses that you ticked off actually are, I mean, those businesses have offices in cities all over the United States as well. So while a business may be based out of one particular city, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's tethered completely to the conditions in that city. I mean, you see a lot of insurers that sort of have their home base out of Connecticut, for example, but they're going to have big offices all over the country. So
that's what I was thinking. I was thinking insurance in Hartford, Connecticut, and I was thinking banks in
Charlotte. Yeah, totally. You're limiting yourself though. If that's your first screen, though, so you know, cities don't have nearly as many companies as the broad market does. So I wouldn't rely too heavily on that. But the instant feedback is certainly a cool feature. And if you're in a city big enough, as Pittsburgh does have a diverse group of companies that you mentioned, but it's a small subset.
Yep.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against, so don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Dan Boyd. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.